This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Breaking news, Savannah Guthrie's mother missing day four. What do we know tonight? Good evening. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us. Lots happening, lots of moving parts in the search for Nancy Guthrie. Joining me in All-Star Panel straight out to Dave Mack, Crime Stories investigative reporter, 100 detectives from the Sheriff's Office and the FBI. Now we are learning a ransom note, possibly the very same ransom note sent to not two, but three news outlets, that being our friends at TMZ, Harvey Levin, KOLD, and KGUN. Okay. Also at this hour, the sheriff coming out and stating there is no suspect. There is no POI, person of interest. But wouldn't you agree, everybody, that they always say there is no POI, there is no suspect? Because once you say X is a suspect, then X is shrouded in constitutional protections. That said, I choose to believe the sheriff. Dave Mack joining me. Dave, what is the latest as we go to air right now?
Right now, Nancy, we have been told that the ransom notes going to three different locations, we're not being told whether or not they are the same note or if it was three different ones, but the content of the note, one of them anyway, specifically talks about places inside the home of Nancy Guthrie and talks about specific pieces of evidence at the crime scene that would only be known by somebody that was in there at that home. We also know, as you mentioned, 100 detectives are working on this case right now, plus the FBI. And President Donald Trump has promised even more support to get to Tucson, Arizona, to try to find Nancy Guthrie.
You know, I want to look at that note one more time. I'm about to bring in Jessica Finn, senior investigative reporter with the U.S. Sun, but to Dr. Bethany Marshall joining me. Let me see, Bethany. Bethany, renowned psychoanalyst out of the L.A. jurisdiction, author of Deal Breaker. You can see her now on Peacock, and you can find her at drbethanymarshall.com. Dr. Bethany, how'd that strike you? Or else. That sounds like a fifth grade girl's novel. Do it or else. Or else what?
Well, it's very coercive. It's very menacing and threatening. But if this was a real ransom note, Nancy, wouldn't this have been submitted or sent to the family privately? Wouldn't it have been sent earlier, like right after the mother is missing, when the family is completely frantic? The fact that it is sent to TMZ and another news agency has copycat written all over it to me.
Something about it. Brian Fitzgibbons is joining me, Director Operations USPA Nationwide Security. What is that? He leads a team of investigative experts. They go all around the world looking for missing people. By the way, former Marine and Iraq War veteran, Brian, there's something puerile, something juvenile about or else. Who writes that? Do it or else. That phraseology is bugging me.
Yeah, and there was something notably missing from this alleged ransom note, and that is a proof of life, right? For this ransom note to hold any weight, the author of the note would have to provide some kind of proof of life that they were that they did have Nancy Guthrie in custody and that she was alive and well for that note to have any value.
Well, here's another thing. And Jessica Finn, let me go to Jessica very quickly. Senior investigative reporter, the U.S. Sun. Jessica, thank you for being with us tonight. Jessica, what do you make of the so-called ransom note being sent to three outlets and claiming knowledge of what Nancy Guthrie was wearing at the time she was kidnapped and describing the interior of her home as it was left at the time of the abduction?
You know, the sheriff's department has been so close to the vest as to what information they're giving out to the media, and it's been really interesting to watch. They're doing a great job at talking to us but not saying a lot. And I think that really, this ransom note thing, we don't know if they've previously had a ransom note that they've discovered that was sent directly to the family. And that, who knows, maybe these people who have abducted her are getting frustrated by the sheriff's department not acknowledging them publicly. I mean, that could be a thing that's happening right now. The other thing is, and yes, we have not heard that there's been proof of life. However, the sheriff did say today during an interview with NBC that he believes Nancy's alive. And so as to why he is suddenly saying he believes Nancy is alive after these ransom notes went to news stations around the country yesterday, there's something there. There's might be a there or there that maybe we just don't know, because the sheriff, again, is holding these cards so close to the vest, despite, you know, being accessible to the media.
I want to bring in Jeffrey Gentry joining us, forensic certified blood stain pattern analyst, senior crime scene analyst and death investigator, former toxicology analyst, author of Forensic Science, Applications to Death and Crime Scene Investigations, author of Bloodstain Pattern Analysis, author of Death Investigation, Information to Obtain During a Forensic Death Investigation, on TikTok at Jeffrey Gentry, BPA, Blood Pattern Analyst, Facebook, Jeff Gentry, Bloodstain Pattern Analyst. Jeff, thank you for being with us. Jeff, of course, I'm just a trial lawyer, but when I looked at the blood, let's see the blood that is outside of Nancy Guthrie's home. It looked to me like low velocity droplets, free falling, which to me, it looks like maybe from a nosebleed. It does not look like high velocity spatter. It does not look like high-velocity spray that you would see from a gunshot wound. It does not look like we haven't heard anything about throwback on the ceiling or the walls from a bludgeoning. And Jeff, when they first told me that her DNA, Nancy's DNA, was found in the home, I was like, well, of course her DNA is in the home. She lives there. But how does that tell you, the sheriff, that she was abducted? Ergo, either a copious amount of blood, which means she's severely injured or dead, like we saw in the Jennifer Doulos, Connecticut Mom of Five case, there was so much blood in the garage, they knew she was dead. The location, such as on the ceiling, right, which would indicate a bludgeoning and then a throwback, or spray or the high velocity, as if there had been a gunshot wound. Looking at the blood pattern that we see, Jeffrey Gentry, that gives me hope that she is alive, because you don't have the other things that I mentioned, Jeffrey.
So when I look at this blood, I, of course, any blood at a crime scene is always concerning. I mean, you should take all precautions if you find blood at a crime scene. It is a tremendous amount of evidence that's in the blood. Not only can it tell you events that happened, but then, of course, you have the possibility to get DNA. But when I look at these blood patterns, I'm not overly concerned. So you're exactly right. These are passive blood drops. They are drip stains, a little bit of a drip trail. And then there's a blood into blood pattern. A blood into blood pattern is when blood is dripping from height into a blood source. And it creates that neat little pattern of drip stains with the little satellite spatter around it. So this would indicate, one, that this is not a major injury. Somebody of that age can get skin tears very easily in their arms, on their hands, and those are going to bleed quite a bit. But it also indicates that this person is upright. They are stationary for some period of time, but then there's also movement as well with the drip trail. So nothing that I'm seeing would indicate that, one, this person has a traumatic injury like a gunshot wound or a stab wound, like projected blood patterns. You mentioned cast off from a weapon. You don't see impact spatter. These are all large volume stains that are going straight down, indicating that that person was either walking or stationary, but they're upright. The other thing that I look for is, why isn't there blood on the doorknob?
Hold on. You got me drinking out of the fire hydrant. That's a lot. Okay. I like for you to just go, but I've got to dissect what you said. I hope I didn't interrupt your train of thought, and you know that you were going to say, and second, but could you again slow down and state what you just said? Because I find it extremely compelling. And yes, of course, blood at a crime scene is always bad. It's not good. But given that, would you start again with the passive blood spots, the drip stains?
Absolutely. So what we're looking at, I'm looking at the photograph right now. There is a drip trail. So those are individual circular blood stains that obviously fell from height. So this person is upright. There is nothing at all to indicate that they were dragged. There's nothing at all to indicate that they were on the ground and bleeding. You don't see any blood pools. So that gives me hope that this person is alive. The drip stains and the blood in the blood patterns, that's one of the most common patterns you see at any scene, just because usually somebody's upright, they realize that they're bleeding, and they're walking around either trying to get help or going from one point to another.
Hold on. Look at the spot right there. Jeffrey, I'm following up on what you said. You can almost see what would be her footsteps based on what you're saying. One by the doormat on square two. See, it starts on square two, square one starting at the door. Step, 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 step. I mean, I'm reading into it, but that's all we can do right now.
That's exactly what you'd expect. If somebody has, say, a minor injury and they're kind of standing in the same spot, kind of moving around, but then a lot of times people are stepping in their own blood or the suspect is stepping in their blood. So I hope the investigators are picking up on that and looking for footwear impressions or what were the suspects possibly wearing. The good thing about her possibly bleeding too is the fact that her blood is not going to only be at this scene, but whatever vehicle she was taken in, the blood's going to be in that vehicle as well. Because a blood pattern like this, considering that she might be taking anticoagulant medications, it's not going to stop bleeding right away. It's going to continue to bleed. And so that gives you the possibility of a forensic link from the crime scene to the suspect vehicle. But again, I don't see anything here that stands out as overly concerning regarding death. There's no blood patterns that would suggest a major violent event happened and that this person is obviously deceased. I don't see that at all.
Everything you just said is music to my ears. Jeffrey Gentry breaking it down in an amazing way. Look, she's 84. She's on meds. She's got a heart problem. She's got a pacemaker. She's bleeding. It's not good. I know it's not good, but I'm looking for anything. I'm looking for anything because I care about Savannah. I want there to be a good outcome. But we have to look at the facts as we know them. Minor injury, walking upright, no blood pools. She's not on the ground. Okay. Nothing to indicate a traumatic injury, such as a gunshot wound, no cast off. Okay. What more? And I'd like to see the blood again. You were about to say, and second. What was second? Was it the vehicle or is there something else?
Well, one of the other things that I look for is not only where did bleeding begin and where did it end? Where did the person start out? Where did they travel to? But I don't see any blood on the door frame. I don't see any blood on the doorknob. It's a black surface on the screen door. But I don't see anything that would suggest that she was bleeding and trying to get back inside of her house. So you got to wonder, where did this begin and where did it end? Like I've mentioned, there's no major blood pools. There's no transfer patterns on the ground. So we don't think that she was dragged away from her home. We don't think that she crawled away from her home. There's only a couple possibilities. Either she walked away on her own and didn't have any major injuries, or she was carried away from her home. But then you got to wonder too, where did this blood trail end? Was there any blood in the driveway? How far did it extend? So it does give you a lot of answers, but then I've got a lot of questions too. So I would love to be out there looking around at this scene.
Hold on, before you start with those questions, can I see the close-up of the door again? Because we were told, Dave Mack, that there were signs of forced entry. Gosh, I wish we could zoom in on that. Forced entry, but that the door was unlocked. That tells me maybe they came forced. Wait, am I seeing forced entry right there on the right? No, I'm not sure that I am. Look at all those locks. There's a heavy duty, it looks like iron, screen door with double locks on it. Maybe the forced entry was at another entrance or window, and then they walked out this way. That's pretty bold to walk out of the front door. Am I seeing the front door, Dave Mack? I think I am. Is that the front door to her home?
It is. And the thing is, Nancy, you've got to realize that we've been told that Ms. Guthrie cannot walk 50 yards without assistance. So she's not mobile, which means whoever is taking her out of the house would have to be helping her. So they wouldn't be able to go crawling out a window out the way they came in. They would pretty much be left with, if they're taking her out, to go out the biggest pathway, which is going to be the front door. And as you mentioned, those blood patterns, if she's got a bloody nose or something along those lines, as they're taking her out, they're leading her, or I say they, because you're kind of talking two people having to help carry her out and lead her down the clearest path possible. So that pretty much makes that a real possibility.
Yeah. With my mom, unless she's using her walker, it is really hard for me to, I can do it, but it's really hard to get her up and walk her by myself. And as Jeffrey Gentry is saying, we don't see any indication in the blood that she fell at any point, was being dragged along. A lot happening, guys, and I know we keep going back to the one photo over and over, but that is the way you prove a case. You take one piece of evidence. It could be this writing pen right here, and you think, and you think, and you examine until you squeeze every bit of information out of that one thing that you can. And did you hear Jeffrey Gentry analyze this blood in a way that I have not heard? Keep thinking, Jeffrey. Keep thinking and percolating. To Brian Fitzgibbons, I want to talk to you about practicalities. Practicalities. If this is a ransom. Oh, and that reminds me, I'm going to circle back Jessica and Dave about, do we believe this Bitcoin account is real? Because I've heard that it has been authenticated. Doesn't mean the ransom note's real. Hey, like somebody could get my checking number. They could figure it out, right? Or come up with a number. But that doesn't mean I'm part of a ransom or a kidnap. So that could be a legitimate, authenticated Bitcoin number, account number, and still not be connected to the Guthries. But to you, Brian Fitzgibbons, you've done this 100 times. So you ransom someone. Don't you believe at some juncture you're going to have to show proof of life? I mean, why kill her? Don't you think at some point they're going to have to, if they want that money, they're going to have to show proof of life?
Absolutely necessary, right? Because that's the key to this whole thing. If this is a kidnap for ransom case, they will want to make it very clear to the Guthrie family that Nancy is alive and well. Prior to them sending any type of ransom money, they would obviously demand that. So, you know, that being absent from this ransom note really stuck out to me, because, you know, you're not going to risk communicating too many times without providing it and potentially exposing your identity.
What do you make of sending it to three different outlets? KOLD, TMZ, and KGUN, KGUN. What do you make of three different outlets, Fitzgibbons?
Knee-jerk reaction to this, Nancy, is that this is either a hoaxer who's trying to make a quick dollar off of this horrible scenario, or second, if it is actually tied to the case, that there's some kind of distraction taking place, that they're looking to tie up resources of law enforcement.
Jeffrey Gentry, let me get you to weigh in on a thought that was actually, you brought it up as well, the blood. The blood conceivably in the car, if she is bleeding from the nose, how could they possibly eradicate the blood from inside the vehicle? And yes, there had to be a vehicle. And whoever did this is brazen, because they took her out the front door right there in her own neighborhood. So tell me about the possibility of blood being in the car, Jeffrey Gentry.
So if this is, in fact, her blood, and I haven't seen anything in the news that would say that they did DNA testing already and proved that this was her blood outside of the house, there's always, I mean, I guess the possibility that it's a staged crime scene, too. Whenever I teach classes, I use my own blood, and I'll make a pattern exactly like that to demonstrate an event where somebody's standing upright and bleeding. So there's always that possibility. So hopefully they've already done the DNA testing and have confirmed that that is, in fact, her blood. But if she's actively bleeding, either from the nose, and my thought is just with her being a little bit older, rather fragile, that she might have skin tears on her arms. I would suspect that when they do find her, that she's going to have some kind of skin tears on her arms that created these blood patterns, arms or hands, because elderly people, their skin is thin. But if she's actively bleeding, she is going to keep bleeding. It's not going to stop. And so she's going to bleed inside of the suspect vehicle, either on door handles or inside on the seats. And that's not really easy to get rid of. I'm not going to tell everybody exactly how to get rid of blood, but I could definitely give you some ideas. But there should be some evidence of cleanup if they did try to get rid of it, either bleach or other chemicals. And 9 out of 10 times, if people, suspects are willing to leave behind blood at a crime scene, they're not going to do a very good job cleaning up a car. So that leaves me hope that there is going to be that forensic link between her residence and the suspect vehicle.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Back to Jessica Finn joining us, senior investigative reporter, U.S. Sun. What have you learned about the timeline? At first, we were told 2:45 a.m. Now we're thinking more about 2 a.m. A neighbor states that he went by the home at 6:45 a.m. and nothing was happening, suggesting that she was still there. I think it says just the opposite, that it was all over. She had already been taken by 6:45 a.m. What are we learning, if anything, from the neighbors?
Well, so one of the neighbors, a couple of the neighbors now, I've seen, we have our own reporter on the ground in Arizona at the U.S. Sun, and then I've seen other reports of other neighbors who have actually reported that there was suspicious activity on their own property within like several blocks of Nancy's home, that there was an individual that had been snooping around and looked suspicious. One of the neighbors that we spoke to had actually called the cops about this incident back when it happened 2 months ago. There was another incident in the last couple of weeks with another neighbor that was about 10 minutes away from Nancy who reported a similar incident. We have the neighbor that's directly across the street who said, when I had emerged from my home at 6:45 a.m. on Sunday morning, I didn't see anything. So, you know, again, her car was left behind, her wallet, her keys, her phone. You wouldn't notice if Nancy was there or not at 6:45 in the morning if she had already been taken, because everything was still left as is besides Nancy herself. You know, from what we know, she was dropped off at 9:45 p.m. on Saturday night. And that drop off, what came after, she had dinner at Savannah's sister Annie's house and Annie's husband Tommaso. They had dinner together, and then Tommaso drove Nancy Guthrie back to her home. He watched her go in the door. But of course, by the next day, she was supposed to show up at church. And around 11 a.m., her fellow parishioners called the cops. Called the family first to let the family know she wasn't there, and then the family went to go check on the house. Of course, the cops were called. So that's kind of the general timeline that we're working with.
Well, I noticed that you just said that the son-in-law dropped her off, not the daughter, and that he waited for her to get into the home before he left, correct?
Yeah, it is. Okay. It is. It's been confirmed that he was the last guy to see her.
Okay. And they all had dinner together before that. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. At this hour, we are learning that multiple experts are pushing a multiple abductor theory. Jessica, why?
Well, for a number of reasons. She's not mobile, like we've said earlier in the broadcast. She can't get around on her own. So it would take some effort to actually physically get her out of the house. And not in the sense that it would take two people to carry her, but you need like somebody to escort her out. You need the waiting car. You need to get her in the car fairly quickly. And so there's the idea that, you know, really this is at least a two-man job. There's also been some theories that there possibly was like a junior abductor or kidnapper involved who may have been scoping out the property in the days and weeks before this actually all went down. But it does seem that at least the very night of likely requires a couple of people to get her out of the house and quietly gag her if needed and get her into the car and then swiftly drive away.
Dave Mack, joining us from Crime Stories. Dave, what can you tell me, can you expound upon the sightings of a, quote, suspicious person?
Actually, Nancy, yeah, they're actually more than one, okay? A suspicious man was actually seen lurking in someone's yard a couple of weeks ago. And it was, he wasn't just like a phantom. It was enough that he actually set off a motion detecting light that awoke the homeowner. This was about 10 minutes away from Nancy Guthrie's home. You know, as we've mentioned, it is a neighborhood, but the homes are not like right pressed up against one another. There is a little distance between them. This is an elderly man, and he says he caught the guy in his yard after the motion sensor went off and the floodlight switch is on. The light spooked the guy, and the fellow left away. But that's not the only one, Nancy. That was several weeks ago. But now we find out that there was a suspicious, tall, strange man reportedly lurking in a yard near Nancy Guthrie's residence about 30 minutes before police arrived. 30 minutes before police arrived, strange man in the neighborhood. All I could think of was Coburger going back the next morning. So we've got at least two different individuals.
I disagree, and I'll tell you why. Because somebody had to be with Nancy Guthrie.
Sure.
Unless there's more than one person involved. I don't think that they... Well, but you know what? You're right. Coburger did go back.
I think you're talking about having more than one person getting around. Again, this goes back to her lack of mobility, her size, medium build, and 84 years old. She's not going to be moving fast. You're going to have help to come out of that house. And you talk about... You're taking care with your mother to get her moved around. And these are people that don't care, and it's not going to be easy. So I'm thinking there had to be at least two. So there might be somebody sitting with her wherever they are while the other one's back there watching what's happening.
Dr. Bethany Marshall joining us, a renowned psychoanalyst. Dr. Bethany, it's my experience when you bring somebody else in on your crime, at some point, somebody's going to talk, or the wife of the perp knows about it, or the girlfriend, or it just starting to get too big and too many people know about it. What do you think?
That's what I've been thinking. I share your thoughts about that. I was thinking, who is sitting at home watching their TV or reading the news online and thinking, my husband left at midnight. I wonder where he went. There's somebody out there who knows something, Nancy. In terms of these blood drops, you know, she had a pacemaker, which tells me she was also on blood thinners, right? Because you typically prescribe that to people who have pacemakers, and that the life-saving medication may in fact be her blood thinner, right? So that without that, there's a chance of her heart throwing off a clot or having a stroke or something like that. Another question is, if the blood drops end right there on the doorstep, how did they get her all the way out to the wherever the car was? Did they have a wheelchair waiting for her, which in which case they know a lot about her and her health issues? Okay, so that's very important to me. And was there blood in her bed? I mean, people who are on blood thinners, often they just bleed during the night without even realizing it. And then also, if the blood stopped on the doorstep, did somebody have a cloth or a bandage or something waiting for her to stop the blood drops? And just one other quick thought, Nancy, you know, I'm sure NBC is combing through all of Savannah Guthrie's emails. Did she cover a story that made somebody angry or pissed off or threatened? Was there somebody stalking her or sending threatening emails? I mean, you said the vengeful nature of the ransom note or else. Is that reflected in language of emails that have been sent to her? Because she is a well-known figure, and they have a lot of security at NBC. And that's an angle that I think nobody's talking about. It would be really interesting to know more.
Okay. At the risk of poo-pooing Dr. Bethany Marshall, focus on doctor. I'm certainly not a renowned psychoanalyst, but that sounds like a fifth grade girl's mystery novel, that Savannah covered a story and somebody read the story or heard the story and got so mad that they went, oh, I'm going to track down her mom on the other side of the country and kidnap her and ask for money.
Hey, Nancy, I've had hate and threatening emails after being on your show. You know,
thank you.
People read all kinds of meanings into what they hear public figures say, but also could it have incited somebody into thinking about how to get back at Savannah or put her front and center of some disgruntled person's life? I think that's something that should be explored.
You know, I can't poo-poo anything because who would have thought that a PhD criminology student, teacher, would target four random people he's never met and murder them in the middle of the night. No sex attack, no robbery. Mm-hmm. But it's almost unheard of. So I really don't have a leg to stand on to poo-poo anything at this juncture. Speaking of trolls, Jessica Finn joining us, U.S. Sun, what about it? I've heard that there are evil trolls attacking Savannah at a time like this.
Yeah, incredibly, I guess not incredibly, it is the world that we live in, right? There have been several notes sent to Savannah through NBC, basically, you know, claiming that they did this and all sorts of horrible allegations and threats to her. It's really kind of thrown her name aggressively into the national lexicon in a way that has not been, you know, in a way that her name has not been out there before. And unfortunately, when you're a victim of a crime, as you know, Nancy, you become victimized even further. You often, as a case like this unwinds. One of the stories that I did earlier this week at The Sun, actually, to Bethany's point, is how NBC has stepped up security in and around 30 Rock as a result of this case, that people on air, that the on-air talent are very spooked over this whole situation. They're all very concerned for their own families and their own lives, and NBC has stepped up security around 30 Rock. They've also had additional NYPD patrols going on in the area. So this has had a real chilling and ripple effect throughout the NBC family.
Brian Fitzgibbons, how hard is it to track Bitcoin?
You know, what we learned recently is that this Bitcoin account associated with the ransom note is indeed an authentic account. Now, when it comes to tracking the ownership of that account, that is certainly going to be a more difficult task.
Really? I thought it would be more like an IP address on a computer.
This could be a lot more complicated than that, Nancy.
Well, okay. What do you mean by that? I'm just a lawyer. What are you talking about? Why is it hard to track a Bitcoin account? Somebody's got to create it. It's got to be listed back to somewhere. It's got to be attached to, is it attached to a bank or no?
It's going to be possible, but Bitcoin inherently has certain amounts of privacy, a lot more than a standard bank account or an IP address would have. So you would have to assume that, again, if this is an authentic ransom demand, that the author of that ransom note has gone to great lengths to secure that Bitcoin account that could not be traced back to him, and that is certainly possible.
Aren't they ID'd by alphanumeric wallet addresses and not names?
That is correct. So you're not going to have an individual's name and street address associated with it like you would, you know, if they said, you know, wire money to this routing number in this checking account number. You know, that would be easily traced and verified.
Well, I can tell you this, Fitzgibbons, you may think it's hard to track Bitcoin, and maybe it is. But what, are they going to let it sit there forever? At some point, they're going to move it. And you want to tell me the feds aren't going to be up their tailpipes 3 inches when they try to move that to another account, to another account, to another account? I mean, Washington, D.C., the FBI, they're crawling with people that are digital experts. This is their Super Bowl. Just please put money in that Bitcoin account and see what happens. Although I find it interesting, I think Dr. Bethany brought it up, that it was sent to 3 news outlets, TMZ, KOLD, and KGUN. Why them? Why not the family? Okay, hold on just a second. I want to make sure we've covered everything. The story that's floating around about an elite group from Border Patrol entering into the fray. Dave Mack, that's been discredited, correct?
Not just discredited. They were brought in for the first day of searching in the area around the home, mm-hmm. but they were sent home Monday night.
Right now, I understand that the search is back on. Drones, helicopters, foot searches had been called off for a period of time, and they have been renewed. That gives me hope. That gives me hope that LE law enforcement believes that they can find something through those searches. If you know or think you know anything about the disappearance of this beautiful grandma, Nancy Guthrie, please dial 520-351-4900. Repeat, 520-351-4900. Before I sign off, Jeffrey Gentry, I gave you a minute to think through what you're hearing. Any other analysis of the scene or the blood? Anything?
I just think it's crazy that anybody would think that they could get away with this. Like you said, I mean, with the FBI, hundreds of detectives working on it, how do they possibly think that this is a crime that they could get away with? So I do definitely believe that there is good hope that she's still alive, especially considering the patterns, the circumstances, and hopefully they find her and quickly, and the rest of the people that are involved.
Agree. Again, tip line 520-351-4900. And not only that, we are seeking help from a higher source, and we ask that you join the Guthrie family and the Crime Stories family in prayers for the safe return of Nancy Guthrie to the loving arms of her daughter, Savannah. Nancy Gray signing off for now. Goodbye, friend.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.